Welcome to this episode of the Orville Universe Podcast. Today, instead of talking about a specific episode, we're diving deep into Orville news. What's happening with Season 3? What's happened with some of our favorite characters? And we're saying thank you to our first listener feedback.
All that right after this. Welcome to the Orville Universe Podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
I'm Matthew Westfox.
What's up, my man?
Not much. I love this show, and I love that we get to do the episode by episode kind of reviews. But it's nice every now and then to kind of step back and just take a little bit look at the wider picture, especially because this isn't a show that we're just kind of reviewing everything that's happened. You know, we're looking forward to getting some new episodes sometime.
Yeah.
So this is gonna be fun to kind of get a little bit of the bigger picture about what's going on.
Yeah, man. I'm excited. To get to new episodes of this show. I've liked it a lot, and covering it week to week will even enhance the experience further. So that's going to be cool.
Yeah. And I will say it does seem like we're going to have a long wait, but
that's
at least we do know it's going to happen soon.
Yes.
But let's start with saying, I think I speak for both of us in saying we started this podcast because we love talking about this. Mm-hmm. Matt and I are both people who do not mind the sound of our own voices by any means. and we love bouncing ideas off each other. But the fun thing about this podcast is not only that we get to share thoughts with you all, but you then get to share thoughts back. And I really want to encourage folks to, and more information will be at the end of the episode, but find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter, find us on email, send us your thoughts. We'd love to hear them and talk to you about them. And then if you're down, love to read them on the air. I also think there's a bit of irony here because one of our last episodes, the episode about episode 7, the social media episode, Matt and I went pretty deep on a couple of tangents, and we went pretty far into a long conversation about economics and the super rich in our own world that did tie into the episode, but kind of loosely.
Yeah.
And I know, Matt, you and I had a real feeling of like, did we just turn off all of our listeners? So the fact that our first ever listener feedback was about exactly that was kind of fantastic.
Yeah.
But I want to let our fans know what that's telling us is that what you guys want from us is long diatribes about economics and Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
So if that's what you want, fantastic. If that's actually not the main reason you listen to the Orville Universe podcast, write in yourself and tell us, because else we might really get the wrong idea. but I will say, Douglas Robinson was the, Robinson, I should say, was the first of our, listeners to write in. And he wrote, first of all, he started the sentence by saying Matthew is right, which, you know, I think both of us can agree with that sentiment.
Yeah. Totally.
And then he specifically said, Matthew's right. Specifically, I agree with Matthew W. more. I think it's morally wrong to seek profit at the expense of others, and people like Bezos are not good people. Even if he's doing something that he is allowed, that does not mean that it's right. And I say this as a 30-something business major. I think there should be more accountability and respect for people in business, and I think hope things are slowly going that way. Kind of a cool note on that. Also, a whole bunch of CEOs recently signed a document saying that they were going to try and do more to just not be profit-focused. Again, this is not an economics podcast, so we're not going to go back into that argument. But Douglas, thank you again so much for writing back to us. I think both of us feel that way, even if I'm a little more vindicated than Mr. Carroll. But mostly just I want to say to everybody, we're going to take very seriously everything you guys say, whether it's in agreement with us, whether it's totally critique of us. You're welcome to do what Douglas did and send that as a kind of private message. He specifically gave permission for us to read it on air. If you want to send it privately and not give that permission, that's 100% okay too. But also, if you want to have a more public discussion, go to our Facebook page and just, you know, make a comment and get a conversation started, because I think both of us would say that's the great part of a podcast is not only are we throwing those ideas out into the world, but you can tell us what you think as well and get a conversation going.
Absolutely. We're very accessible.
Yep, definitely. All right. So, even though the listeners have spoken, I'm going to say that maybe they still do want to hear about Orville itself and not just economics.
Okay.
So what's happening with season 3? Because that's we finished both seasons 1 and 2. What's happening next?
The biggest piece of news about season 3 is that it was delayed by a lot, I think. It's probably we were expecting, and it, honestly, for our podcast purposes, it's probably good because we were looking at down the barrel of trying to do these maybe more than once a week just to catch up before season three. But they have moved it. We were expecting it around December or January, but they've moved it to late 2020.
Right.
So we've got now plenty of time to keep bringing you the Orville Universe podcast.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of interesting pieces to this news. The news was accompanied by the fact that the Orville is going to move from Fox to Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll no longer be broadcast on Fox. It will now be on Hulu, which that's not as big as a change as you might think, because they are both owned by Disney.
Yeah, the only thing I really don't like about that is I actually think the Orville has a much broader appeal than, say, something like Star Trek, the current iterations of Star Trek, because they're kind of following the old model of Next Generation. My mom loves the Orville, which, my mom doesn't watch anything genre or sci-fi, but if she just catches the Orville on, she'll watch it. And that's not going to happen anymore, which kind of bums me out.
It's an interesting question, because I admit I only watch – for me, this is no change at all, because I watch the Orville because it goes on Hulu.
Me too.
After it's broadcast on Fox.
And same here.
I don't know the numbers, but I'd be curious to know, like, will this increase or decrease watchership or, you know, people tuning in? Because the numbers of people who actually get network broadcast television has gone down so significantly that especially among the target demographics, which, right, your mom is not necessarily a part of, and so that it might be a narrowing of the demographic in a bad way.
Yeah, I feel like it can only be a bad thing for the size of the audience. Now, it might be just because people, like you said, you're already watching it on Hulu. Like everyone that has Hulu already had access to this, but now just less people have access to it.
I think in terms of the audience, you're right, it's going to go in a different direction. I don't think it's going to be that much of a drop-off, though, because I do think so many people have Hulu. But I think you're right. There'll be a little bit of a drop-off. I do think, though, because I was actually just reading some tweets by McFarlane today about this and about why he was happy about this happened. And I think he made a very good point, which is one of the things that going on network television does is it keeps you to an incredibly strict time limit, because they have to sell an exact amount of ads and they have to make the show fit into a 1-hour time block. And so often that means the exact time of the episode has to be, it's about 42 minutes. Yeah, whatever. 42 minutes and a couple seconds one or the other, but it's a very exact thing. And a lot of times a lot of really good stuff has to get cut, or sometimes a little bit of filler has to be added to an episode to make, and McFarlane said, like, listen, he wants to tell stories that are approximately that time limit. He doesn't want to do like hour 10 minute, hour 20 minute episodes, but that this allows him a lot more freedom and allows the creators a lot more freedom, because now if they have an episode where really the story needs 43 or 45 or maybe even 50 minutes, they can do that. Or if maybe they can tell the full story in 40 minutes and 30 seconds, they can do that too.
Yeah. And a lot of these shows, they'll end up doing most of the episodes will be about 42 to 46 minutes or so. But then a lot of the Hulu shows, like the finale, they'll just take more time and it will be an hour and 15 minutes or something like that. Like Handmaid's Tale is on Hulu and I love that show. And when it's an important episode, they'll take an hour and 15 minutes and just have a huge episode.
Well, and obviously you and I are big MCU fans, and I'm contractually, as anyone who listens to Superhero Ethics knows, I'm contractually obligated to mention Daredevil as often as I can.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I really loved about Daredevil and the other shows on Netflix is it rarely went to an hour, but it often would be able to say, look, we need 3 more minutes in this episode, or we need 5 more minutes, and that was okay.
Absolutely.
I'm very bummed that we have to wait till, the end of 2020. There's going to be so much, although given the presidential election that we'll be going through right about that time, it might be a very welcome change.
True.
And one thing I do wonder is, because I honestly don't, most of the stuff I watch on Hulu is not Hulu original, it's Hulu showing other shows. When Hulu does original television, do they drop it episodically, or they do it the way Netflix does, where they just drop the whole season at once?
They have done both. So I'm not sure. I'm hoping this one will be episodic. I think that I like the episodic model, especially for the kind of stuff we do where we have these longer conversations about the show and gives us a chance to speculate and think about where it's going.
Yeah, I think as a fan, I like the just binge watch drop because I like just spending 12 hours wallowing in a particular universe. But you're right. As podcasters and as listeners, I think maybe it is better to have a little more episodic.
Even as, you know, like I totally with you. Like as a – I think the impulse to binge watch is sort of it's sort of the same thing as the impulse to binge eat. I mean, like it's really fun and you want to keep eating because the food is so good and the content is so good. But afterwards, you look back and go, did I get anything out of that? Like, I think that when they drop 13 episodes of something at a time, I will completely not remember certain episodes because of the way they, you know, they just kind of gloss over them or episodes run together. And I think oftentimes when they release them as episodes, they have thought about a good show has thought about the arc of that episode and what that episode is supposed to say as a piece of art in itself. And then as a part of the tapestry that's created by the whole season, you know?
See, that's interesting. Cause I would say I have a very different perspective there, which is that I am a binge eater sometimes. And so I know what that part's like. For me, the problem that I get is when the shows that I really like are very immersive, you know, where you just kind of get lost in that universe and it's hard to even think about something else because everything flows so well into each other. And I find that I will, like, The Orville actually is one show where I did not watch it episodically. I waited until the whole season was out and then I went and binged it. And part of what I liked so much is that, you know, when we got to episode 7 and Bordas and Clyden were doing something, the stuff that had happened just 4 episodes ago had been, for me, 4 hours ago. And so it was very fresh in my mind and I could make all those connections. I find if I'm spending, you know, if my week is I'm watching one episode of this show and one episode of this show and then one episode of this other show, all of which have very different moods and environments. And then the next week I'm doing it again and watching one episode of each of those 3 shows. It throws me a lot. You know, I find I'm not able to get into any of the shows quite as much because my brain is still all over the map.
Interesting.
So, and here, listeners, this would be a great thing to write into us on. I'd love to hear how many of you watched Orville season 1 or 2 as a binge, or how many of you watched it as the episodes came out. And do you generally prefer one or the other? Cause I don't think either of us is right or wrong. I think it's just different ways of consuming media.
And there's also different shows that are specifically made for the binge and different shows that are specifically made for the experience of watching an episode. And I think The Orville, because of how episodic it is, even though there are overarching elements, I think it's a nice episodic show. Like, yeah. I think it works really well as I'm going to sit down for an hour and enjoy this universe and enjoy this one morality tale and have time to think about that one morality tale. Whereas some shows like, I don't know, The Walking Dead, for instance, there's almost never a point in separating those episodes. They just kind of run into each other. And one always just inevitably drives into the next one. Like, I feel like Breaking Bad is the same way. I feel like AMC has made a point of their shows are always just like, don't you want to see what happens next? Whereas Orville's not that way. Orville's like, let me contemplate that, like that thing that Ed just went through.
Well, it'd be interesting because certainly, I mean, I think the other reason why I kind of want it to be a binge show is that when it comes to, you know, if we're talking about 13 or 14 months from now, I'm going to be so fiending for more Orville that I just will want all of it at once.
I get that.
And maybe you're right, that won't be the healthiest.
Some of my favorite ways that they do that, and they do this sometimes on Hulu, is they'll drop 3 or 4 episodes right away, or 2 to 4.
Yeah.
And at least like it kind of cements you back into the world, and you go, oh, now I'm back. Now I'm craving the next episode. They do that with Handmaid's Tale sometimes. They'll drop two or four episodes in a week, or 2 episodes the first night, 2 episodes the next night, and then it's episodic cast after that.
Well, and I will say that for me, here's the irony, is that for a long time, I you and I became friends because I started writing in a lot to your other podcast, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which I've been a huge fan of for a long time. And you guys used to piss me off about this because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was one show that I used to love to wait until the whole thing had been finished and then binge watch it all. But you guys were doing an episode every week, and I wanted to be part of the conversation. So you made me watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodically. and I think I got a lot of that experience, and it probably was good. But I remember being so annoyed that I was like, ugh, I can't just wait to binge watch. I have to stay on top of things.
That's funny. Yeah, I think that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is one of those shows that is good to binge because the episodes don't always mean anything. It's often
it's
just
not
like,
episodic. It's so much part of one.
Yeah, it often is. I think it's at its best. I think that almost all shows to me, and I mean, this is obviously not a universal. This is my favorite way of working is when a show has a really good arc within the episode that you can really point at, oh, that this is where that episode began and this is where it ended. And it feels like a story, but it feeds into the bigger narrative in a real way. And I think Agent Shield sometimes is successful at that. And sometimes it just feels like, oh, that's just a piece that gets me to the next piece that gets me to the next piece.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely see that. I can see where that's coming from. Well, we'll see. I think I'm sure that they will announce that as we get closer. And either way, I think we're going to enjoy it. But it'll be interesting to see how. And like I said, for listeners and fans of the Orville, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on that. Anything else on that, or do we want to move on to some of the other questions we wanted to talk about today?
I think we can move on. I'm excited to see what they do with Hulu. But I am saddened for my mom.
Yeah, no, I hear that. Well, you know, might be time to convince her to get a Hulu subscription.
She has mine, but she does never use it.
Okay, I was gonna say, I don't, you know, legally, any of our Hulu executives who are listening, we're going to suggest this purely as a joke and that no one should ever do so, but it does seem possible that more than one people might use a password every now and then.
Oh, no way.
I know. Although, as I understand, Hulu's actually had been tightening that up, that actually now, if they understand that the signal is coming from, like, not the same house you're in or something, that I have no idea how that all works.
I don't know. You're allowed to have multiple profiles, and I mean, I think, like, within a family, it's you know, if it, like, I don't know. I think it's fine.
Right.
I don't know. Like, not that that matters, the actual lineage, but like, just like, you know, if you get a Hulu subscription, obviously your kids are allowed to use it.
Right.
So does it go the other way? Are my parents allowed to use it? I don't know. But they do have profiles you can set up. So they intend for Hulu to be used by multiple users. And the thing that they do crack down on is if multiple screens are being used at the same time.
Right.
You actually have to pay for that feature. And that's with Netflix too. Like, when you sign up for Netflix now, they give you the option of how many screens you want it to be viewable on at a time.
Yeah, my partner and I had to deal with that because there'd be times when like she and I would both go to the gym and we would each on our phone with our headphones want to watch something on Netflix. And for a while we could do that, and then all of a sudden Netflix would be like, "Nope, can't do that anymore." And we're like, "Oh, all right. Well,
I have a trick for you." For that. Oh yeah. Here's the trick, everybody. Close your ears, Netflix executives. Netflix,
you're costing us our Netflix subscription sponsorship right now. You know that. So,
oh yeah, here we go,
listeners. This is our dedication to the art: is that we are willing to give up the millions of dollars that I'm sure we were possibly going to get from podcast from Netflix.
Yeah, we were going to get paid,
but we're going to do it for you.
We
the listeners
care too much about you. They have downloadable content now.
Oh, okay, that
where you
work.
Can download to your phone. And almost anything Netflix original and a lot of other stuff is also downloadable. There's certain things that aren't, but you can hit download instead of play. Right next to the play button, there's a download button. And you download it to your phone. And then if you turn off mobile data on your phone, they can't tell what you're watching.
Okay.
So you could have 15 phones with all that stuff downloaded and literally play it all at the same time.
For a while, we just had to figure out, like, which one of us wanted to watch Netflix that day and which one of us wanted to watch Hulu and just switch off like that, but that would also work. So before we get into our next topic, let's drop a spoiler warning. These news and notes shows, I think, will always kind of have a general spoiler warning because we're going to talk about everything we know, but we're now specifically going to talk about a plot point that happens in Season 2. So if you haven't gotten through most of Season 2, this might be a good time to skip ahead a little bit. I guess the other kind of big news, and the unfortunate thing is that we don't have any more news about it, but I think it's worth commenting, is that one of the you know, very kind of eyebrow-raising things of season two was that after spending a lot of time building the character of Alara, all of a sudden and with very little explanation, she left the show. I mean, I guess she, there was good explanation, like they wrote her a specific kind of going-away episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, so unfortunately, we did some digging. There's still very little information about why Alara left. But what was your take on that? Like, just in terms of the, of what happened to the not in terms of why it happened, but in terms of the show itself, what was your response when we got to that episode and Alara left?
It bummed me out, and it felt very clearly because they bring in another character who's also Salayan, and it just felt very much like they were intending for that character to go on, but had to change actresses. Yeah. So I don't really know why. Now there is a lot of speculation online. Apparently, McFarlane and her were dating. So it is possible that their dating relationship ending caused her to leave, but there's also speculation that she went to do a movie, but it was like a Netflix movie, so who knows? But within the universe of the show, it bummed me out because I really liked the character of Alara. I felt a lot of affection for her, and the new character I have yet to really get into. I don't know. She's fine. She's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't like her as much as I liked Alara.
I think I have that same reaction because at first I wondered, is this because they sort of felt like they'd gone as far as they could with this character and they want to bring in a very different kind of a role? Like I thought, you know, maybe they're going to bring in another member of Bordis's species to like have a different kind of dynamic there or introduce us to some all new species that was going to be a different thing on the plot. So when they brought in someone who, especially because you're right, hasn't had much of her own characterization yet. I mean, she kind of is, you know, a similar body type and you know, different facial and different hairstyle, but is Salayan. And if the role, you know, if you want to sort of write a single sentence about Alara, that Alara was a character who at first glance was an unassuming young woman who it turns out is much stronger and much more capable and much more, you know, efficient at that role of security chief than you would think at first glance, which has been an effective characterization in the way they've built her up and dealt with her confidence issues. This new character seems like it's straight out of central casting to replace that trope, you know?
Yeah.
And I hope we get some more. It does seem like she has more confidence and she doesn't have some of the struggles that Alara does. I hope we get more to characterize her and to make her separate. I mean, the simple fact is the fact that I don't remember that character's name offhand, which I think is unfortunately very telling.
Yeah, I would like for them to bring in more characterization and not just make her Alara part two.
Agreed. Well, like I said, I don't even remember this new character's name. Do you?
No, I don't. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, and that's both of us maybe not paying enough attention, but I think it's also a fact of that character hasn't really found a way to stand out for us yet.
It's also been a long time since I watched season two. You know, we've been watching all these season one episodes, but we'll catch up to her soon.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Well, and so let's go into the last issue we wanted to talk about today. And this was the one that kind of actually, we'd wanted to do an episode like this for a while, but this was the thing that really made us think, okay, this is the time to do it, is you found a great podcast episode of Sean Carroll's Mindcast, and the link to that will be in the show notes. Which was basically an extended interview with Seth MacFarlane, primarily about this show.
Sorry, it's Sean Carroll's Mindscape podcast.
Oh, thank you. Okay. My bad there. But yeah, it's a great episode. People should check it out. And we don't want to rehash it, but listening to it, I think both you and I had the thought of so much in these episodes till this point, we have been saying, you know, it would be great if we knew what McFarland was thinking, because a lot of the time we were saying, like, if this is what McFarland is thinking, this is brilliant, or we wonder what McFarland was thinking here. And so getting a chance to really hear him go pretty deep on a lot of those questions, especially because a lot of the things that we thought we were like, oh, if McFarland actually is thinking this, it's brilliant. He confirmed that was exactly where he was going. So let's at least, we're not going to rehash that whole episode, but let's talk a little bit about some of the things that we heard in that episode and how they may kind of change our view of McFarland and the Orville and what's happening with it.
Yeah. Well, for the most part, it just confirmed to me that he's just paying attention to the subtleties of the show. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty clear based on the show, but I was impressed just to hear him talking about it so thoughtfully.
One of the things I found most interesting about what Seth had to say, Mr. McFarland had to say, especially because it confirmed something, or actually kind of put a new spin on something that you and I had really obviously had a lot of feelings about. You and I had both talked about how, and Jacob and I have talked about this on my other podcast, that we weren't wild about how much of the Family Guy sort of sophomoric humor there had been at the start, and that when we saw it kind of fade away, we wondered if maybe that had been kind of network pressure or like others kind of putting pressure on Seth to say, like, this is what got you famous, so this is what we want. And it was only later, when the show got more established, that he was able to move away from it. And from what McFarland is saying now, at least on this podcast episode, it was an interesting kind of, because it was similar to that, but actually a different take that I found actually very relatable, which is that the way he explained it is that he knew he had been very successful as a comedy writer, and that that's where he had sort of like people had come to really love his stuff, and that he frankly was dealing with a lot of confidence questions about how would people respond if he really tried to go out on a limb and do more dramatic and more, you know, not, and so with comedy, but with comedy that wasn't relying on the Family Guy style of humor. And that in those first couple episodes, he was really relying on, you know, it's kind of like going back to your wheelhouse. And that it was only later as he got more positive feedback on the show and got more confidence about it, that he was able to start moving away from that kind of humor and into more of the kind of what we love about the show now. I thought that was fascinating. And to me, that felt in some ways even better than the theory that I'd had about it being network pressure. And I really loved that he was that transparent about sort of saying that he wanted to get away from it, but it was hard because that's what had paid his checks for so long.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's really interesting, and it's a little more honest. I feel like network pressure always feels like, you know, it's just someone mucking around with the stuff that you always kind of just hate to hear it, you know? Hate to hear that that's like why something has, you know, happened. It's nice to hear that it's just an artist doing what an artist does.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And it was also nice to hear that he, as we suspected, he is very conscious of how many of his tropes are reflections of things that Star Trek established. And I mean, part of what he said is that it's kind of impossible to do people on a ship in space without making Star Trek references because Star Trek kind of wrote the book. But it was also nice to really hear him say that, like, this is very much intended to be his love letter to Star Trek, but as well as him trying to kind of fix some things that he thinks Star Trek didn't do as well.
I also thought it was interesting. He kind of did, in the interview, they ask him about other sci-fi and all that stuff, and he doesn't actually talk about Star Trek first. He talks about a lot of other shows that he's also being inspired by. Just old sci-fi and Twilight Zone and all kinds of stuff. And then he finds like, oh, and also Star Trek. Clearly it's Star Trek. Like, but it's almost like it's a good bit into the interview before he actually gets into Star Trek, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah. I mean, one point that in terms of a place where he's breaking that trope, and I'm sure other people have done this, but I think he didn't mention Star Trek by name here, but I think it was very clearly talking about Star Trek. You and I have commented on the fact that it seems like in this show, everyone in the 24th century or wherever they are is completely obsessed with late 20th and early 21st century culture, which seems kind of weird to us. And I appreciated that he, when the interviewer asked him about that, his response was, look, yes, it makes more sense, you know, that the people in that time would have much like 300 more years of culture that they would think about. But that attempting to write the music of the future is incredibly difficult and comes off sounding really dumb. And as he said that, I remembered how many times Star Trek or Babylon 5 or someone like that tried to show us what cool hip music in the 23rd century would sound like. And it just always sounded so bad that I had to say, like, no, Seth, okay, if that's the compromise you make, I am 100% okay with that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought that was really funny. You're right. There's never been good future music in a movie or a TV show. Good call. Good call on not making more, I do like, you know, I like in the occasional mention that there's other stuff out there, like in Star Trek when they talk about the Klingon opera and things like that. But it's nice that they're not trying to write like weird music, you know,
like I would. you know, one of the things that Star Trek did and that Babylon 5 also did is they, in dribs and drabs, but eventually you get a sense of what is the history that takes us from the modern day to the day of Star Trek or Babylon 5 or whatever it is. And I would like it if at some point we got a little bit of, like, there was subtle references made to, you know, when, you know, the World Federation was built, or the, you know, if World War III happened or if it didn't. Like, I'd love to know more about what happened in the time between 2019 and when the Orville is taking place.
I do like when they do that, but it's gotten Star Trek in trouble because Star Trek decided to do that, and they wrote about the eugenics wars, which were supposed to happen in the year 2000.
Oh, yeah, that's also very true.
And so now we're in, like, 2019. So they've actually written a series of books where the eugenics wars was a thing that happened, but it happened in secret. Like, it's a secret war that was going on. And so they tried to retcon it to be this, like... And so Khan is supposed to be from, like, the year 2000 or something like that. Like, he's supposed to, you know, have been part of this war, eugenics war. So they made him, like, the whole thing a secret.
I mean, I always think that's one of the fascinating things about science fiction is often when history actually catches up to the thing science fiction was talking about is happening in the far future.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when we got to that day that was the day that Marty McFly goes to in the far future.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, our world doesn't look like the world that he envisioned.
No.
But also, there was a more serious point I was going to make with that. I think the other interesting part of that to me is that sometimes our future is nowhere near as cool as the future they imagined. But sometimes it's the exact opposite. You know, you look at early Star Trek episodes, and they envisioned that in the 22nd and 23rd centuries, all the computers would still be monochrome.
Yeah.
That's all they could do themselves. And it's just, you know, that's a moment where it's like, you know, my phone has more processing power than they imagined the Star Trek Enterprise's computer would have.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
And everything's toggle switches. There's no touch screens.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So pretty funny. Yeah.
Cool. Was there anything else from that podcast episode we wanted to get into?
I do not think I have anything else to say about it. So I think that's about all we have to talk about today, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think, again, check it out. A lot of the other stuff you and I have talked about, you know, he makes very clear that he wanted to go more into moral gray areas and not so black and white and things like that. And it just, it gives a great perspective to...
It's really good. Sean Carroll's Mindscape podcast. No relation.
Cool. I think that's all we have to say.
This isn't some weird nepotism that we're trying to send you guys over to the Sean Carroll's brother of Matthew Carroll.
We get no money from it whatsoever.
Yeah. No relation. All right. Peace, guys. Thank you.
And just remember, in space, you can watch Netflix and Hulu on any computer you want.
Thanks for listening to the Orville Universe podcast. If you'd like to hear more from Matthew Westfox, search your podcatcher now for the Superhero Ethics podcast. If you'd like to hear more from me, Matthew Carroll, search your podcatcher for the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast and the Star Trek Universe podcast. Or you can check out my music. Just search for Matthew Carroll wherever you listen to music.